Welcome, everybody, to episode 345 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, February 13th, 2019. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by John James Jacoby.
Hello.
And it is very windy outside. Again.
We had that. All the past 3 days has been super windy. Snow drifts everywhere. Our driveway at the house is just covered. Snow blowing around everywhere. It's wild.
Yeah, my basement, it's starting to look like an in-ground pool.
Oh, no, really?
Well, we've got issues there, but no, it's not that bad, but it leaks. And
there are some houses
We just bypassed winter, and we've gone right into summer, severe storm, monsoon season. It's weird.
And yet
Seattle, they're getting unprecedented levels of snow.
We still have super cold. It's only 20 degrees here, I think. So we had some freezing rain. There's a layer of ice over all of the snow and everything here for like a day or two. It was kind of crazy looking. But it was not warm enough to melt anything. So it's still just freezing. It was crazy.
All right. So today, we didn't have a show last week. So we've got some things to talk about. We've got plenty of time on the show today. First thing I want to talk about is a post written by or published by Morten Rand Hedrickson.
This is a good one.
Who we recently had on the show talking about the WordPress Governance Project. I really enjoy reading posts that Morten writes because he makes me think. He makes me ponder. Makes me consider things perhaps in a different light. But he published an article titled "On the Corporate Takeover of the Cathedral and the Bazaar." Now, everyone except me has read the open source book, "The Cathedral and the Bazaar." I know it just has something to do with it's cited all the time in open source. Basically, Morten describes, what open source initially was. You know, let's say back in the '90s. You know, it was kind of an affront to the corporations, kind of a hey, I'm not going to be tied into your proprietary system. I'll create my own solution and release it out there in the wild so others can benefit. Mm-hmm. And he sort of describes this evolutionary process of what open source has become. And it's gotten to the point where he describes what I would consider kind of corporate takeovers of open source initiatives and projects. And he talks about how there needs to be he says, quote, "For open source to stay open and equitable, we must find a way to reward contributions with real value. What exactly that looks like, I'm not sure, but I hear there's a thing called money, which could be used in exchange for goods and services." And he also says that, you know, the inherent problem, as he sees it, is the failure to put real actionable value to open source contribution. You can't buy food or clothes or a roof to cover you from the elements through GitHub contributions. You need someone to pay you for those contributions. So it's a very thought-provoking post that I hope our listeners will read, because kind of taking a step back, and I don't have any hard evidence to prove this, but on the surface, it certainly appears as though many open source projects out there are being funded by corporations. Morten cites Android as a good example, and how it's largely controlled by Google and Samsung. And if you try and get involved in an open source project where they say, "Yeah, contributors are welcome" and all that, if your contributions do not benefit one of those entities, you're not going to go anywhere. You're probably not going to accomplish much. Mm-hmm. And I was sort of thinking about this in WordPress. As it relates back to WordPress, and I think the points that Morten brings up, I think in a lot of ways is why people raise their eyebrows when they hear about automaticians being placed in roles, leadership roles, being able to influencing type roles within the project. And as more automaticians are added to the project, I think that's it raises some red flags. But on the flip side, Matt has also been a big advocate of this five for the future approach, where he's trying to get more companies and more people and different perspectives involved with contributing to the WordPress open source project. But John, you said that you sort of have talked about this issue on the show, and sort of Morten, I think, maybe describes it a little more eloquently than what we have discussed. But what do you think? It sounds like it's part of a cycle that's like a corporation gets involved, maybe with one person or two people gets involved, and it almost seems like a slow, gradual sort of inside job takeover of an open source project to the point where that corporation has funneled so much time and energy and now money into it that they essentially they buy it, they acquire it.
Kind of. There's two thoughts to this. And so everyone that's listening should read Morton's post, because it's very enlightening and is worded and written in a way that I think will probably be revealing to some folks that maybe haven't seen this already. But this is sort of the opposite side of the coin of the same problem that everyone has had with WordPress specifically and Automattic's involvement since the very get-go. It's not that Automattic bought their way into it. It's that Automattic was the only company for a long time, aside from CrowdFavorite and others, that have started that. Pagely with going their own direction with managed hosting the way they went in the early days, and others, like, everyone found, carved out their niche and went their own way and contribute to WordPress in the ways that they can or are able to, what have you. But this is just the natural progression of how open source software, I think, really does work. Is it needs if a project isn't big enough, then people don't take it seriously. But people also look at the big companies that back it as an indication of success. And so if a Microsoft, if an Automattic, if a Adobe, if Google isn't contributing time towards your open source thing, then it does reach a point where it's not the choice that people will, they're going to pick the one that has the most backing. And so it's a very natural but scary sort of progression that happens with open source projects that do become big or influential enough. But this certainly isn't new. And so myself in the early days, or the brief 3 years that I was at Automattic, was fully sponsored by Automattic to work on .org related things. And so Jen Milo, Ryan Boren, these were people that were paid full time. Peter Westwood for a little while, Andrew Oz. These are staples in the WordPress community that were sponsored by Automattic to work on WordPress or .org things. And so the whole catalyst for Morton's post, and because you took the other two quotes that I was maybe going to spin off of, but is the tweet that I think inspired this post and I want to get this right, because it's I don't want to misquote Morton's, because I think it was really important, but where is it? It says decisions are made by those who show up, but this usually means decisions are made by those who can afford to show up, and those who cannot are left to fend for themselves. And so therein lies sort of the problem and the solution, unfortunately, is that and eventually it gets to the point where the project is so big and complex that the time it takes to solve the harder and harder problems means fewer and fewer people can actually afford to help and show up, because the problems are so difficult to solve that they take more time. But that also is a project management issue, because that means that problems aren't being broken up into small enough chunks to actually make them workable. But at the same time, this is not new. I mean, folks like myself were very fortunate to have multiple years paid to show up and to make the decisions and do the hard work and make the tough calls to guide the projects or .org or whatever in the directions that felt right at the time. And so that is no different and is still happening, but it is happening by more companies other than just Automattic. And so perceivably, that is what people have asked for and wanted this entire time, is for more GoDaddies to show up, more Dream Hosts to show up, more people from more companies contributing in more ways. And so now what we are experiencing is diversity today, but Morton's post, I think, hints at the broader, the next version of that is really who wins, who puts the most money in and has the most people showing up to contribute the most right now. And what does that mean for them in the long run?
And one of the other quotes within Morton's article, he says that the privilege of working for a company which pays us for open source contribution changes our status as contributors in a significant way, because we no longer have to weigh contribution against paying for childcare, food, or a visit to the dentist. If we want open source to stay open and equitable and not become the domain of corporations, we must face up to the reality and contribution and the value it creates, end quote. And there's even been discussions, I think even somebody, in fact, it was a controversial Q&A at the last State of the Word. I think when somebody basically asked Matt about contributions or you know, paying contributors, and there's been discussions on, you know, maybe the WordPress Foundation could set up a fund, or through the foundation actually fund contributions or fund certain people. But I believe there's legalities involved with that, so I don't think that's why that's happened yet, and there's other issues involved there. But in the case of WordPress, I don't think because of Automattic and because of Matt and the leadership, and I guess because of also the size of the WordPress project, I don't think one corporation can come in with a bunch of money or hire a bunch of people to contribute to WordPress and suddenly take it over. At least I don't think that's a possibility, but who knows? You know, maybe enough money and enough people, you can take something over.
It depends on your perception of a takeover. Is okay. It hostile? So let's speculate, completely hypothetical right now. How many core contributors do you think Yoast has right now? There's a lot. If you look at Sergey and other, Google has multiple. There are companies that are dedicating many full-time people towards working on their own individual passion projects and things that they are focused on or working on. And so it may not be hostile, but there are companies that are employing people that aren't Automattic that are paying them to show up and work on things.
And I think for like a company like Yoast, it makes a lot of sense for them to have. I mean, you look at Yoast Evolve and some of the other people at Yoast and how involved they are with WordPress. It kind of gives them leverage to sort of shape the direction that WordPress is going, which, by the way, with their plugin and WordPress as a platform, is the cornerstone of their business. That's why they exist.
Exactly right. Yep. And so I retweeted something and I plucked a snippet out of it. And we should add it to show notes, because it's an article that I think that I really enjoyed reading that has nothing to do with WordPress, but I'm by a fella named David Mosscrop, and he wrote an article for the Macleans. And so his snippet that I really like that directly applies to a lot of Morton's post and open source in general. He said, it's as if those who fight for egalitarian systems are meant to start their struggle by disadvantaging themselves and making their endeavor as difficult and uncomfortable as possible on principle. And so, loosely translated and poorly paraphrased, is in order to contribute to open source software, you had to volunteer your time and you had to do it for free and you had to give your time away and you had to do it like a starving artist. You had to do it for the passion of it and not because it paid the bills. It was almost a part of the culture for a really long time that you would do this for free. It was kind of the expectation that, you know, maybe the person who actually found value in your art, in your code, in your creation would love it enough to pay you for it, but it was never the expectation. And so this is an interesting evolution of that, where people are discovering the importance of this platform, and they're able to use their influence over that project to ask a salary for it and are getting it. And so is it wrong or morally, if someone chooses to have sponsorship and have a NASCAR style list of people that support them, whether or not they, what their motives are, or if they win the race, if they're making it better, what's the difference, I guess, either way. And so, Morton is right in many ways, but I'm curious what the alternative is. How does an open source project actually succeed, or how do the people contributing to the open source project get earn a livable, workable, healthy compensation package that will work for them or their children or families or whatever, without there be somehow being companies that are profitable enough to donate that time? I don't know how you have one without the other, given the way that the economy works.
You work on open source projects all the time, people do all the time, and then they get to a point where they really enjoy this project or what they're working on, and then they're like, boy, wouldn't that be something if I could get paid to do this, if I could get paid to build mm-hmm. and fix this? Mm-hmm. But maybe, you know, maybe just as important as where is that money coming from? Yep. And what is the basis? What is the purpose or incentive of that money?
Right. And the other part of it that I've at least said it, maybe not on the show, but like some of the, eventually some of this has to give. Like, there are certain pieces of software that I have found value in my life. Wikipedia, SQL Pro, NetBeans, pieces of software that I term, there's a bunch that I use on a regular basis that I either paid for or I sponsor or donate money to, because it's not a lot, but it's enough, because they are tools that other people have built that I use on a regular enough basis where I want to feel like I'm at least giving a portion of what is enabling me to do my job effectively back. And is ideally, we'd be able to earn and distribute that income and stuff more and more over time through all these things. But think of how many pieces of software that you interact with, how many things you use, how many people it probably took to build those things that you have paid $0 for. You don't care who built SQL Pro. You don't care who all the contributors are behind the Eclipse or NetBeans or anything. There's just so much out there that you cannot possibly pay everyone for all of it all the time. And so part of that is why companies are the crutch, I guess, right now for how people earn a living working on open source software occasionally. And seeing this in WordPress is, in my opinion, today, a very healthy thing. It is a good sign of stability, progress, teamwork, and it's thriving. It is a good energy of progress that's being made because of it. It could go sour, but the one thing that we've said on the show before is the WordPress community is generally very elastic and good at course correcting and kind of in rejecting the things that don't feel right. Sometimes it's not always instant or immediate, but generally been pretty okay so far. And so hopefully that doesn't happen. And if it does happen and Morton gets to say, I told you so, then hopefully, again, folks are able to kind of call that out and go, hey, that's not the way that this is supposed to go. And it'll still be okay anyways.
You know, I think about it, it kind of reminds me of like special interest groups lobbying specific people with money to get what they mm-hmm. want. Mm-hmm. or did it influence things, or even, you know, companies sponsoring people working open source projects, and that's kind of like their way of buying stock in a particular project.
It kind of feels a lot like that, right? Or a bounty program or whatever. How do you name these things? What's the difference?
Doesn't have purchased so much stock into a project that they essentially, that they are now the stockholders you have to please with that project.
Yeah.
And I don't see that in the near future happening with WordPress.
It wouldn't happen overnight, and it wouldn't happen without a lot of people
seeing it happen before it happens.
But I don't think that it would feel any differently than what we've already seen happen. Whether or not you have a group of friends or a group of coworkers or groups of people that, you know, have collectively ownership over the direction that WordPress or any of these things go, honestly, and this is why I think it's both good and bad, is a lot of it is just it's what feels, it's all intuition, it's guts. It's like, it's, does this feel right? And that is unfortunately somewhat different for everyone. And so there are people that are feel like what they're doing is good and they're doing the right thing. And they're doing what they think is the right thing with the right people. But it might not be. And so I don't think any of this, again, is like ill with any negative intent. It's not usually to be a hostile type of takeover, but it is possible for there to be people squatting on things for too long or not letting people influence the projects the way that maybe they should as openly. We've seen that happen, and it might be happening now. Sometimes you can't always tell while it's happening until you look back and you go, oh, that was happening then, you know? So you live and learn, I guess.
Boy, that Morgan, he was on to something.
He definitely is. Definitely is. Friend of the show, Morton. Always good to talk a little Morton on the show.
It's a very thought-provoking piece. And for our listeners out there, if please comment on the show notes when it's posted with your thoughts on both the post and the topic. It'd be interesting.
I also wanted to
see your replies next week.
I wanted to say also that I really love Morton's theme on his WordPress site. I really like the black and white and simple. It's very clean. And then I looked at the theme footer, and then it links to WordPress.org, but then the theme isn't there. So I'll have to look that up later and figure it out. But Morton, I really like the way your site looks right now.
So moving on, a bit of cool news. Ben Meredith and Kristen Peterson, the wife of the late Jesse Peterson, they've relaunched the PetersonMediaGroup.com website. So after Jesse passed away, they've slowly been taking care of his customers and working on the site behind the scenes. And earlier this month, they relaunched the website with a brand new design, which looks great. And the Peterson Media Group, they actually do hosting, security monitoring, backups, vulnerability checks, sort of they take care of your site for you, and they host it. And there's also a nice remembrance blurb on the front page dedicated to Jesse, which is very cool. So congrats to Ben and Kristen, and hopefully business goes well for you two, and you can continue on with the Peterson name, with the
website looks Peterson awesome. Media Group. Looks good.
Let's see. Earlier this month, the WordPress 5.1 field guide was published on the Make Core website. And what this does is it basically, in one post, links out to all the various big changes that are going to be happening in WordPress 5.1. So that's the PHP site health mechanisms in 5.1. Improvements to the block editor, of course, multi-site metadata, which we've hinted about on earlier episodes of the show, the Cron API, a new JavaScript build process, updated styles and strings with other developer-focused goodies. There's actually quite a bit in WordPress 5.1. In fact, in the post, it says that there's over 303 bugs, 156 enhancements, and 9 feature requests, and 23 blessed tasks have all been marked as fixed on WordPress 5.1. So that, to me, it seems like a pretty significant release. It appears to be on schedule, and if everything goes well, it will be released on February 21st.
Yeah, there's a ton of stuff in a 5.1. Yeah. It's almost so much that it's hard to pick out your favorite little thing. And what I love is that there's a good, great problem to have. And a lot of these are like a lot of big deal features going into 5.1. And I love that this much can happen and change, but that it's all going to kind of feel a little bit the same, right? Like the human readable duration function is pretty cool. I would have done it differently, but it's neither here nor there. It's fine. A lot of extra filters, short circuiting things like queries for meta keys. I think Boone might have had a hand in that one. I'd have to look back. The site meta or blog meta is awesome. Even the accessibility tweak, which burned me a little bit because I happened to have had customized some of those in some plugins, but the admin table pagination links changing from just regular old links to having a button styling, I think feels pretty right. I think it looks good on top of the list tables in there. So that was a welcome accessibility improvement there too. It's a small little thing, but I like seeing the evolution happen. And I'm really excited about, on the super, super nerdy developer side, the new cron spawning is like going to be a pretty killer feature to build stuff on top of, taking advantage of some newer PHP 7 things.
Explain to someone like me why that's going to be a great feature.
So cron is a...
You already lost me. No, I'm just kidding.
That's funny. So cron is normally a piece of software that is called a daemon. It runs on a server, listens to scheduled tasks, and then performs those tasks whenever it is time for them to happen. And so it's good for things like garbage collection, where you can do it once or twice a day. It's good for checking up on things occasionally here and there whenever things are supposed to happen. And WordPress has had its own implementation of of cron called WPCron for years to do a lot of those same tasks inside of WordPress. One of the problems, though, with WPCron is that in order for cron to fire, it has to happen on an uncached page. And so sites that use caching heavily for their page output to make them real, real speedy may never fire cron, because they'll never spin up PHP or never hit WordPress to actually load cron to do any of the cleanup. The only time that it would happen is if you're logged into your site and you're clicking around in the admin area and it knows that a cron was missed, and then it would fire that cron off because you're logged in visiting uncached admin area pages. And so cron can do other, and WPCron specifically can do other crazy weird stuff. And so what this in theory is doing is taking advantage of some improvements and things to PHP 7.0.16, probably. I'm trying to look up what this was, but it uses just the PHP FPM built-in PHP listeners and wrappers to make everything smooth and work the way it's supposed to, and make sure cron doesn't die halfway through. And it's just as I'm like browsing around through all the issues that are in here, it's having non-blocking cron. There's just a ton of stuff in here that's really, really awesome to see. So and I honestly hadn't paid any attention to any of those features, and this is something that that I'm excited to see is in 5.1.
You've been so knee deep in sugar calendar, which we'll get into a little bit later. Speaking of Gutenberg 5.0 was recently released, and this release actually, and this is the plugin version by the way. So the Gutenberg plugin is still being worked on. It actually adds a new RSS block. So you can, in the block inserter, you can type in RSS, a little thing will show up where you can actually add a URL to a feed. And then in the block controls, you can display the author, display post titles or metadata. Pretty much, this it's a great example of what's happening with the porting of widgets, core widgets to blocks. And this is one of the our RSS used to be like one of the core widgets. So they're making a lot of progress there and converting widgets into blocks. But this also adds a feature called Focal Point Picker for the cover block. And what this does, it allows users to visually select the ideal center point of an image and returns it as a pair of coordinates that are converted into background position attributes. And this results in the user having more control over cropping and displaying images between in WordPress themes and content. Now, in the demo image, there's a very large, I'd say, tall image that's used, and you can see the focal point clicker in action. But what some people have brought up in the comments is that this could lead to the full large file or large image being loaded in the background when really you're only looking at a very small portion of this image. So I have not used this yet. I don't know if the image goes through some kind of conversion or if it's actually cropped and you only see that portion of the image or if it actually loads the full image. So there's a little bit of a concern there, but for the most part, it's a lot of cool features in Gutenberg 5.0 that are expected to be merged into WordPress 5.2.
The focal point picker is pretty neat looking UI. I mean, it's neat to have that baked in as a block in WordPress core, because it means that people will hopefully be able to pull it out and do other cool things with it. But I was pretty excited to see the focal point picker, because that's one of those features that lots of social media sites already have had for a number of years that that WordPress should have, is upload the photo, but then pick what it is that you're actually trying to look at out of it. And frankly, a lot of folks don't have and shouldn't need a Photoshop or Affinity or something to edit and upload some images that they took. They don't need to have or pay for a full photo editing suite just to crop some pictures. And it's neat to see that coming in. The RSS block is an interesting addition, I thought, because so many folks are not using RSS anymore.
Oh, get out of town with that reasoning.
I mean, I'm just saying. I'm still around.
Don't you want to write a post and put an RSS feed right there and take people to a different site? I mean, don't you want to do that?
It's a great UI but it's interesting to see that.
Remember those days of RSS feeds of sites you enjoyed in your sidebars of widget? Man, those are the days.
You know,
with your techno-ratty little pixel image and all that stuff.
Here's my rant. RSS was like just too good for us. We don't deserve RSS, unfortunately. It was just too good. Because it did exactly what it needed to do, and it didn't get in your way or anything at all. I don't know. I'm really sad to see RSS go, but because now we end up with like 50 million different siloed versions of RSS, Apple News, everything else. Ugh. Okay, I'm done. Talk about something else.
All right. Well, continuing on the Gutenberg train, I thought this was pretty cool. The Gutenberg Blocks Design Library is a new plugin that provides pre-built page designs, including demo content, using only the default core blocks that come with WordPress. This is developed by a company called WP Design Hub. And so what it does is you go through these blocks in the sidebar, and there's actual visual representations. And it uses the default blocks. Just really what it does is to add styles. So you have all these different styles to the default blocks. They're reusable. And it also has can be used in combination with other block collections like atomic blocks and editor blocks. And to me, this is an ingenious way of quickly creating a page builder using Gutenberg and blocks. And it doesn't use any short codes. And if you happen to disable the plugin, all you're really doing is removing the styles from those blocks because it's core blocks. So you're not losing any of your content. And they actually have a service, a commercial subscription service. The plugin, you get access to 50 free designs or block templates with the pro service. I believe you, the company aims to have about 1,000 commercial designs available to subscribers by November of 2019, so later this year. But if you haven't checked it out, I highly recommend checking it out, at least because you get 50 free template designs, and it just looks very simple to use. I haven't used it. I'm probably going to give it a try later this week, but I just thought it was like, you know, hey, wow, that's a great idea.
So it's super cool idea, and it's very well implemented, I would say. Their website and the post on the Tavern where Sarah included some of the animated GIF of them going through it. It is a super captivating looking plugin. Like, they really did a nice job of layering some design decisions on top of Gutenberg blocks, which is exactly what we've talked about on the show, as there being really truly an entire economy of this happening. These are fonts, and this is someone applying some typographical styling on top of these are glyphs, and they're being styled like a font would be styled. It's brilliant. It looks super nice. Here's where my spidey sense tingles a little bit, though.
Okay.
The plugin is they have a killer slug on WordPress.org. WordPress.org/plugins/design is what an amazing plugin slug. Buy a WordPress.org account that only has one plugin that is this one. And the website for this website, which is a very pretty looking website, does not indicate who this plugin is by.
Like the individual.
The individual. Who is the person? I have no concept of who this account is from, or where this who is the person behind this product. And so,
well, how curious are you?
I'm not curious enough to go digging. That's none of my business. But it's interesting because it's very ghost written, you know. It's whoever is making this move, I feel like, did a very good job making this move.
A well thought out plan.
Yeah.
But I'm curious to see design slug. Huh.
No kidding, right? And not that there are reserved slugs, but they found a good one. And so I'm curious to know who is the who are or is the people behind this. I mean, I wish them nothing but success and, you know, all that, but just curious.
And a reminder for people that beginning in March, Google Plus, some of the API stuff will be killed. And I think later on in April, Google Plus will be shutting down. And it's actually shutting down, this is like 3 or 4 months sooner than expected. And I think a few months ago, it's because Google found another data leak within Google Plus, and they decided just to shut the whole thing down. So I wanted to put this reminder out there because, A, if you have any content on Google Plus, you need to get rid of it or migrate it off and move it to somewhere else. And B, keep an eye out if you use social sharing plugins like Jetpack Sharing and some of the other plugins that automatically send your posts to Google Plus. Keep an eye out for plugin updates because eventually, very quickly here, they're going to have to remove that functionality because Google Plus will no longer exist beginning in the next few months. So just a little hint out there. And then, hey, Sugar Calendar 2.0 beta was released. How about that?
Woo-hoo! Yeah.
And I do have a bone to pick with you about. It's a small bone, but if you go to the sugarcalendar.com website, there is no link to a blog. You have to know where the link is in order to be able to find this
interesting
post.
I bet that's not on purpose. I mean, I didn't. I can go fix that.
Okay,
right now,
there you go. I'm publicly shaming you for no blog link. You're welcome.
Your feedback is is appreciated, Jeff. Your public shaming will go to good use, and I will make sure that we put a blog link.
Anywho, I know you and Pippin, or you mostly have been working really hard on this, but it's got to be so a little bit of weight off your shoulders to actually have this out into the public.
A little bit. Boy, where do I start? Like, some of the coolest and most weird code I have ever written is in Sugar Calendar 2.0. Like, getting recurring events working is probably the source of like 6 months worth of migraines for me, honestly. Like, it is crazy how difficult it is to query and get the queries right, not just for WordPress, but like in the world. I have learned for figuring out that like an event that starts on December 29th and ends on January 4th and recurs every month until January of 2025, how do you query a database for that every month, even though the event starts and ends in January? So I'm going to show an event in March that technically is only in January. And so it works, believe it or not, in one database query, thanks to a fork of the WP date query class that Boone put a ton of work into multiple releases ago. But it's incredible. Like, it is like the day that I've had it working in like 10 different ways, like over the course of 6 months worth of time. But there is a lot of like staring and undoing and deleting and starting over to make that work. And so, I don't think we have a download link anywhere for new users yet. This is kind of like we added a beta box for existing users, and I still have to update the .org Lite version to include that. But existing users are updating and checking it out. It's pretty awesome and feels pretty great, frankly, to have this out in people's hands. This is like,
so I know on Twitter you're talking about some tiny details. What tiny details?
So there's a few that are kind of neat. So one of the things that Pippin and I both really believe strongly in is having it feel very native to WordPress. And so a lot of work went into EDD 3.0 to improve a lot of that. Some of that transferred over to Affiliate WP, Restrict Content Pro, and now Sugar Calendar 2 also. But the
just looking at the screenshots, it looks like it's everything is like the same UI wise. Yeah, you know, it just blends right into WordPress.
So we took a lot of pieces. So we have the horizontal tabs that everyone likes to not like, but that they really are effective at compartmentalizing a lot of things. We took some of the advanced kind of search filter bar that you see from the media area in WordPress that looks familiar, and added our view modes to it for month, week, day, and list views. With default to month view, because I feel like that's what is the most natural when people are looking at a calendar of events. We can join across taxonomies, and so events can be filtered by calendar like you would have an iCal or Outlook or anything else. We'll just use we renamed the categories taxonomy to calendars and just reuse them like you would have in any other calendar app you've used. We tightened up and consolidated the view here so that you don't end up with like 1,000 different submenus under the top level menu for add new and calendar and settings or whatever else. And so calendars are in the top now so that we can get rid of that top level menu. We did something clever that maybe isn't in the heart, you wouldn't notice, but we highlight submenus instead of the top level menu. I can see Jeff looking at screenshots now. And so if whenever you're highlighted on a submenu, you'll get the little carrot that shows you which one that you're in, instead of it just being bold, is like a little accessibility nudge that you're in a submenu for that thing. And then the calendar views, which is like kind of the dopest part of all of this, the calendar view for the month, the week, and the day, and obviously like the list of events that are there, just extend and use WordPress's regular old WP list table class. And so through mathing the heck out of it, we dynamically generate and rearrange columns and rows by month and by start of month, because as some people start their week on a Monday and some people start it on a Sunday. And so we'll rotate all the columns through the list table dynamically based on user preferences and views to draw calendars and then fill in events on the fly, pretty much with one database query to make all of it cook. So it's pretty sweet. And so you can see the sugar calendar is actually where we use the pagination links in the upper right hand corner of the event view that the accessibility improvement gave us buttons over there instead of links. And so Sugar Calendar works with 5.0 or 5.1 and fails gracefully on old versions or works on new versions. And then we extended the pointer API that you're not supposed to extend, but that everybody does, to show the preview or the pop-up for each individual event that's in the calendar. And so the goal here, amongst the several of them, is that we're able to build a calendar front end that can kind of house or encompass a separate views for any type of event in the back end. And so right now, Sugar Calendar uses an event post type, the same as it did for backwards compatibility, to make events work the same as they always have. But in like future add-ons or connective tissue sort of ways, we can have an easy digital downloads discount calendar, and you can see when a discount would start or end. You could have a WooCommerce add-on in a calendar that would show you purchases on any given day and tally them up inside the pointer. We can kind of do really neat things by just registering a relationship or registering a calendar type. And pulling in data from any source that we would want to. So,
all this, I want event blocks. I want countdown blocks. So, I want purchase ticket blocks.
That's next, right?
Yep. Having, look at you. You're going to have a, you're going to get into the, there exactly we go. You're going to get knee deep into Gutenberg next. You're going to start that building blocks.
100% right. It's getting all of the old, sugar calendar, event list display widgets, calendars, things, getting all of those blockified is next. And so it's been a lot of work, a lot of cool, a lot of fun little things went into this. Recurring events, man, that's the thing, that's the killer.
So right now the beta is for existing users, kind of like a closed beta. Is there going to be an open beta, or
so? Eventually,
I guess not, because it's a commercial plugin, right?
Yep, right. And so eventually, this will just become Sugar Calendar, right? On .org, Sugar Calendar Lite will just get all of this. Sugar Calendar users will just see the update, and they will get this, and this will be their new version of Sugar Calendar. We'll start shipping some add-ons for form integration plugins. We've got a Google Maps plugin that Pippin already updated. A couple of others, and then blocks and some other admin area kind of UI candy, some theme. We might skip. I had a pull request to port theme compatibility from BB Press already kind of in and working, but it's kind of tough to include all of that when everyone wants blocks all the time. And so if blocks really are the thing that people want, it makes it difficult to try and build all the template logic and the hierarchy for something that folks might not really even enjoy using all that much. So we'll see what we do with that. But blocks are the next thing that'll happen in 2.1 probably. But getting this out the door feels pretty good. This was like, I was freaking out, man. This is like a lot of brain, heavy brain work to get recurring events working efficiently in our custom database tables and synced up with post types and everything else.
Ever since the beta was released, I noticed a little bit more spunk in you. You look a little healthier. Dude.
Like I kind of joked that recurring events might kill me, but I also. Like, I mean, I know that's not funny, but it was like a true thing. And then I am like sort of accidentally now like an expert in all of the iCal format and schema for calendars and events. And frankly, like every single example that there is on the internet, on Stack Overflow, on Reddit, on any place that anyone has ever built or commented on the ways that people should build recurring events in their calendar application are wrong. They're all not helpful. And I have read every single one of them. Like, they are just incomplete. They do not do what recurring events are designed to do. And getting this working and right took a lot of just like date, math, time, comparison, logic, that I was, you know, lucky enough to have the time and Pippin understood the stress of the situation to get it right. And so we,
well, I'm glad you're kind of explaining this, because, you know, this is one of those things where it's just, you know, it's just going to work for people and they're going to take it for granted. But, you know, a lot of people won't know the amount of time and work that went into having it just work correctly.
It's crazy, because like if eventually when I kind of talk about it more in detail, or maybe give a WordCamp talk about it, or start showing some code,
you need to go on one of those podcasts, like how I built this.
That would be pretty fun. Like, when you look at the code as it is sitting right now, it does not really look like it is all of that complicated. But getting there was really, really hard. There are still some things that I think I would like to do to improve it under the hood, but no one would really notice whether or not we do it or not. But it's pretty cool. It's definitely pretty neat. It's probably one of the cooler things I've ever built.
And in one of the last tidbits of news we have today, something you wanted to share is that the dark mode plugin, which we've talked about on the show before, is no longer a featured plugin.
Yeah.
Was it ever a feature plugin? You know.
Oh, it was. Dark mode, which is still on the plugin repository, and the plugin author Daniel James, it seems like, plans on continuing to build it out and maintain it. But he mentioned in the plugin review channel on Slack that he wanted to pull it from the featured plugins page, because he doesn't really think it's ready and it's too difficult to maintain right alongside the WordPress core CSS the way that it works today. Everyone that's listening has probably heard I love the dark mode plugin. I use it. I am a huge dark mode fan. And so I believe very strongly that having this option, that WordPress should be, whether or not it should be included in WordPress core is not my say. I think it probably belongs there, but it's sad to see this, to see another plugin author get frustrated by kind of the lack of attention or progress in supporting this idea and just kind of giving up or saying, yeah, it's not going to happen, or it's going to happen a different way. And so just get rid of it, take it out. I'm sad to see it go, because I use it, I like it. I know that browsers are starting to own a little bit of that styling as much as they can. But I think in the meanwhile, no different than WordPress coming with Tweemoji, so that people have emoji support One of the things that WordPress has found success in and always does really well is bridging gaps and making things easy and giving people things in a way that isn't something that is provided to WordPress. It's WordPress solves the problem for users. And so dark mode is another one of those things that people that want a darker admin area UI should be able to get it as a core feature or built in as like a here, this is what you should be using kind of approach, and removing it from the featured plugins is kind of a step backwards, I think.
And you know what sucks is that, you know, open source or in other environments, you've got people who are championing a feature or a certain project that they really get behind, they're really motivated, they're willing to put in the time and effort, and sometimes they already have. They show up to the table and it's just the timing's all off or the prioritization is not there, and maybe they'll say, you know, we'll come back to this or come back another time. And more often than not, you know, that motivation, that drive, not only does the rejection suck, but all that stuff kind of disappears. And if we eventually come to the point where, okay, now we think this is a great opportunity to put this in, or this is a nice feature, usually that drive and motivation is gone. And now you have to remuster it from somebody else or, you know, sort of work on it from scratch. And it just would be nice to have a system in place where if you've got someone with that drive and motivation to harness it at that time instead of letting it go to waste.
Right. And so much of this is about timing too. And because it is open source and a big community with lots of different initiatives, it takes a lot of people to get these things in and lobbied for and accomplished and pushed or done or whatever, to a point where people are comfortable with it or whatever else. And so I get it, but yeah, I agree that showing up and having a passion and putting in the time and having it not pay off is going to feel like a loss, but you know, stick it out. I'm hoping Daniel sticks this one out, because I'm a big fan, and I think it belongs in core. I think it's there's a lot of work to be done to make core ready. To CSS variables and things are kind of just starting to be a thing that people are comfortable using everywhere. So, and browsers are starting again to kind of send the setting. Do I want light mode or dark mode active? So, as the software and the technology around us incorporates these things, I think that there will be a need for this again, hopefully it comes back.
I'm trying to see if. I'm pretty sure I'm using dark mode in Firefox, but maybe I'm not.
Man, I am dark mode all the things. Like, literally my desktop wallpaper has been black for like 10 years.
Yeah. Mine was that for a while. My current one is a night sky filled with stars in a tent. So it's still it's still dark.
And so, like, since macOS introduced dark mode, everything. Hide the dock, hide the menu, dark everything.
And Flux, do you use something like Flux to adjust the blue light levels?
So I have weird eyeballs, and so I run it constantly. I have night shift turned on 24 hours a day.
I always thought your eyes looked weird.
They do. They are, aside from being dark and soulless, I guess, they also, and being unevenly spaced, I'm photophobic, which I learned when I was like a teenager, when I was agonized by the eye exam and the light getting shined in my eye. And so my whole life I had been suffering with just like a huge pain in my eyes from like waking up and bright light from the sun. And so Carrie and I were talking, she had an eye exam today. So Carrie and I were talking about getting your eyes dilated when you go and get your eyes checked. And like, when I would get my eyes dilated, it would literally be no different for me. Like, they'd be like, okay, like, you're going to need to wear these glasses. And I was like, I don't know that you did this correctly, because I see no change in my vision at all, period. And so Carrie's like struggling. I think she's recovered now, but yeah, they dilated her eyes. And so she's like, ugh, agonizing through it. But yeah, so dark mode, flux, all the things, all the time. Blue blockers. Yeah, sure. Bring it on. Get rid of the, the harsh light. Whatever I can do to get rid of it, I'm all about. So,
and speaking of dark mode,
I will say this then. Dark mode, frankly, for me, is kind of an accessibility feature, right? Yeah. I mean, it is a thing that makes me, it helps me spend more time inside of WordPress admin. And so, hopefully it comes back.
And speaking of dark modes, I'm going to pull the curtains down on this episode. Yeah, about that for a segue.
Under an hour. Oh, no, an hour and 3 minutes.
So that's going to do it. By the way, if you want to check it out, I went to rev.com and I purchased a transcript of the WordPress governance episode. Oh, I have that published awesome. On the Tavern.
Oh, I've got one more thing I want to add too.
So definitely check that out if you want to read through that conversation. And go ahead, John.
Yeah, I wanted to shout out Joshua Strebel, who will be keynoting WordCamp Phoenix in February, and that I am super excited and lucky to be keynoting WordCamp Miami in March. And so I hope to see all of you in a place where there hasn't been snow in a very long time.
and speaking of Josh, there's news out there that sponsors are lining up for the next Pressnomics.
Pressnomics. Oh, I've never made it to Pressnomics, and I feel so embarrassed.
I've been there once, and it was a memorably good time.
Man, everyone has nothing but good things to say about Pressnomics every year. So I would love to find my way to Pressnomics at some point.
Yeah, it's a great event. So you can find show notes for this episode and all other episodes on wptavern.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jeffrey, JeffrR0, and John.
JJJ.blog and at JJJ on the Twitter and the GitHub.
That's going to do it for this week's edition. Stay safe out there. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday afternoon. So long, everybody. Say bye, John.
Bye, John. Bye,
everyone. Bye, Carrie.
Bye, Carrie.